Okay, if you just signed on, welcome to the August call. I know a lot of us enjoy being able to hear all the cities come on as we start the call. Unfortunately, we're not able to do that just because there was a feedback problem on one line, but we'll give everybody a chance to sign off. So if you're new to the call, my name is Mark Reynolds. I'll be hosting the call today. And particularly for some of the new chapters, we had some chapters start since last month's call in very, very strategic places for us. That includes Wyoming, West Virginia, and New Hampshire. I think it's obvious, two of those being huge coal states and New Hampshire being an early primary state, so that's really, really important. Welcome to everybody who's on the call, which is usually somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people, primarily in North America. But sometimes some of the Swedes and Australians listen live, which is just fantastic. And then there's also, I'd like to say welcome, after the call, in between months, there's always another 800 to 1,000 individuals and groups who listen to the call after the live call. So to all of you, welcome also. I want to just say something real quickly. I think most of us assume that the way we see the world is how it probably is for everybody else. And I got a note from a couple of people who were organizing chapters, and they were organizing chapters in parts of the country where they're heavily job dependent upon coal and oil industry. And they're concerned that they're starting a chapter and people participating in it could jeopardize their job. So here's the note one woman wrote another. I'm going to keep it all confidential because it's just between the two. She says, you know, I'm so glad you're going to be joining our call. I think you and I were a call together recently where you mentioned how people working or benefiting from the oil and gas industry were afraid for their jobs. I will mention here that I work at the local university where a lot of state revenue comes from coal, oil, and gas. The legislature, well, to sum it up, demands the university concentrate on research for the coal industry. Deans fired, artwork removed, buildings built exclusively for Applied Energy, president hired behind closed doors and fired, unstable times. I understand the fear. I look forward to planning how to work in this environment. You know, I don't often think that people are starting chapters in under those conditions, but it certainly inspired me to hear people doing that in the face of that kind of concern. It immediately made me think of two statements. One is Shakespeare's famous speech from Band of Brothers, from Henry V, you know, the one, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. And then John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy's statement about courage. He talks about men, but I'm going to translate it to women, given this was a note between two women. He said, without belittling the courage with which women have died, we should not forget those acts of courage with which women have lived. The courage of life is often a less dramatic spectacle than the courage of a final moment, but it is no less a magnificent mixture of triumph and tragedy. A woman does what she must in spite of personal consequences, in spite of obstacles, dangers, and pressures, and that is the basis of all human morality. So I particularly want to welcome everybody, and for those of you who are starting chapters where and beginning to working on starting chapters where you have an additional concern, thank you for stepping up like that. It's impressive. Okay, I think most people on this call are pretty familiar with our founder, Marshall Saunders' story. You know, he had spent 20 years setting up microcredit loans, helping the poorest of the poor people around the world lift themselves up out of poverty. He then realized with what was happening with global warming, that given the poor are impacted often most heavily, that there was a chance that everything he'd done to try and help poor people help themselves could be undone by global warming. And so he founded Citizens Climate Lobby. A little over 6 years ago, when he approached me, we went to breakfast one morning. He wanted me to ask to come on board to work with him. We met at this nice little San Diego restaurant called Hobnob Hill, close to downtown, where a lot of San Diego power breakfasts happen. And, you know, we always used to love to go there because they'd read us the whole menu. You could have strawberry waffles. You could have this. There are all these exotic breakfasts, and then we would always order what we always get, oatmeal. But anyway, Marshall was explaining to me what he was doing, and it took me a while to get my head around it. But after a while, I said, Marshall, it seems to me that what you're trying to do is work on global warming and Congress at the same time. And he goes, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. And I said, Marshall, in my view, those are the single two most screwed up things on the planet, and you're going to combine them? He's like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. I thought he'd lost his mind. I mean, Marshall, I'd known him for 25 years. I'd seen him do all these remarkable things, but I thought he'd gone crazy. But then as he began to lay out, the reason he was so confident that this was going to work is because we were going to start with results methodology. and that was our building point and using a very specific methodology for building political will. And we're really happy that the person who founded Results, who built Results, who created that model for generating political will is on the call. You know, we've all been working on the things we've been working on for years. You know, maybe you're in financial planning, maybe it's an activist, maybe a teacher. Sam's been really working on two things. How can people's lives matter, and how do you generate political will? So for decades, he's been interested in and studying that, and hasn't been on the call for a few years, but has been speaking at almost every one of our conferences. Is a really, really important part of our organization. And Sam, thank you for making yourself available again today.
It's great to be here.
Great. Okay, good. Well, Sam, before we get into, we're going to do some stuff we have not done on this call for years, and that is to have the call be more interactive. But let's just talk a little bit about kind of how you arrived where you are. So, you know, Results and the organization you have now, the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation, is really an exploration of how one's life can make a difference. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal journey? How did you come to a place where you believe that that was such an important part of people's lives?
Well, thank you, Mark. Let me just start by saying how thrilled I am to be on the CCL conference call and how moved I am by CCL's breakthroughs in citizen empowerment. So congratulations to everyone on the call. I love telling my story from hopelessness to action. I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music, and I played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic Orchestra for 12 years. Then I started the anti-poverty lobby Results. And people often ask, what was the motivation for such a big change? When I look back, several experiences come to mind. I played timpani in the orchestra at high school graduation in 1964. Just before the ceremony, a flute player came back to the percussion section and told me that a high school fraternity brother, a year younger, had died the day before in a tractor-trailer accident in Georgia. It was her next-door neighbor, so she knew about it before I did. I was 17. When I was 17, I thought I had forever. Mortality was an irrelevant concept. But during the mourning period and the funeral, I began asking the questions of purpose. Why am I here? What am I here to do? 4 years later, around college graduation day in 1968, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. More questions. What is this life? What is this death? Why am I here? What am I here to do? No answers, but the questions are getting clearer. 9 years later, still a musician, I went to a presentation on ending world hunger, thinking it was hopeless. At the presentation, I realized I wasn't hopeless about the perceived lack of solutions. I was hopeless about human nature. People would just never get around to doing the things that could be done. But there was one human nature I had some control over, my own, and my questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do? And here's the end of the story. I got involved in a big way, and in 78 and 79, I spoke to 7,000 high school students about ending world hunger. I'd read some quotes calling for the political will to end hunger, so I asked 7,000 students the name of their member of Congress. Fewer than 3% could answer correctly. So Results started out of the gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger, and on the one hand, and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other.
Okay, wow. And, you know, I think, you know, when people think of Results nowadays, they just think of this huge apparatus and this huge successful organization, you know, that's, you know, increased the amount of money that's appropriated from, you know, $25 million a year to over $2 billion last year, and the significant drop in worldwide poverty that's also happened. I mean, it's still an unacceptable amount of people who starve to death, but the drop has been huge in that 30-year time period. But it wasn't like that always. And so when you started the organization, you had to build an organization. Would you mind telling us just, you know, at least of one story about what that was like? And in particular, you know, the time where the airline said you could get 21 flights in 21 days for a reasonable price.
Yeah, great. So for most of the first 4.5 years of Results, 1980 to 84, Results was all volunteer, and I was a substitute teacher in the L.A. schools. But Eastern and Delta Airlines used to offer 21 flights for $649 if you did them in 21 days. So I'd take a three-week leave from substitute teaching and go out on the road for 21 days. Over an 18-month period in the early 80s, I took five 21-city trips, starting results groups across the country. In 1982, I generated the first editorial in Results, and I want to tell about that. We were organizing candidate forums on ending world hunger, and I had a chance to talk to an L.A. Times reporter. When I told her the editorial page editor at the L.A. Times had not called me back, she told me to call the only woman on the editorial board at the time. I called the editorial writer from a payphone at a junior high school where I was a substitute teacher. I was on a break. She agreed to do the editorial, and I wrote the following in Reclaiming Our Democracy. Quote, "It was normal for me to distribute 100 photocopies of an action sheet or an important article, but when that first editorial appeared, I remembered thinking, not only has the LA Times written this editorial, but they've made a million copies of it, and they delivered it for us, too. How marvelous. My early morning dash to the front yard to get the LA Times was my run to democracy. I realized I had the right job to make a difference. Substitute teacher. I realized I had the right training to make a difference. Music. I realized that I had the right bank account to make a difference. Nearly zero. I realized that making a difference wasn't a function of any of these. It was a function of commitment and persistence."
Wow. Ah. Takes my breath away, Sam. Okay,
I'm only here to make you cry, man.
You know how hard that is. Okay, would you mind just sharing, like, one anecdote? I love the one about where the Reagan administration was kind of fighting you on something and how persistent everybody was.
Okay, great. Well, this is 1985, probably 30 years ago. The volunteers had generated three editorials the year before on our first campaign, creating the Child Survival Fund. Now, in 85, the U.S. was fighting a change in the funding formula for a U.N. agency that supported small farmers around the world, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD. IFAD showed that for $400 that it took to ship a ton of grain to Ethiopia, they could train a farmer to grow a ton of grain every year. One of the groups IFAD funded and introduced us to was the Grameen Bank. The OPEC countries wanted to reduce their share of IFAD's funding by 2%, making it 60% from industrialized countries and 40% from OPEC countries, or 60-40. It would cost the U.S. an additional $3 million, and the other industrialized countries were willing to pay the U.S.'s extra $3 million, but the U.S. fought it for 2 years, almost to the point of killing IFAD. Results volunteers generated 42 editorials in 5 months, and they were mailed three or four at a time to 19 key officials in the Reagan administration and in Congress. So you didn't have to live in Oregon to see the Oregonian editorial or live in Atlanta to see the Atlanta Journal editorial. We sent those editorials and 40 more to those 19 key officials, three or four editorials at a time. In a volunteer-generated editorial in the New York Times, the New York Times wrote, quote, "By all means, keep pressing OPEC to honor their pledge, but for hungry Africa's sake, don't disable this worthy program with sanctimony," end of quote. So in July of 85, after 5 months of deluging the administration with editorials, I got a call from the State Department official in charge saying, "You can stop the editorials now. 60-40 is okay. You can stop the editorials now." End of quote.
Oh, God, that just gives me endless amounts of joy. Great. Okay, so now we're going to do something. You know, usually the speaker part of this call is a talk. And what we want to do is really leverage Sam being here to make sure we're getting the most out of every piece of media we do and all the different activities we have. So Sam's actually going to call on some groups and interact with them a little bit. And what will happen is when he does, if you would star six your line to unmute it, And then when you're done with the interaction, star six it again to remute yourself. And we haven't tried this for a while, so we're doing this without a net, and hopefully it's all going to come off nice and clean. So, Sam, go ahead.
Okay, great. And let me just say, I'm going to call on cities in pairs in this order: Orange County, California, and Lancaster, Pennsylvania first, Minneapolis and Madison, Wisconsin next, then Salt Lake City and Golden, Colorado after that, San Diego North and Lincroft, New Jersey after that, and if there's time, we'll end up with Asheville, North Carolina, and Nashville, Tennessee. So be prepared to unmute your lines, and when I call on you, try and limit your response to 1 minute, and we're going to probably take one response from each city. So I led workshops at the CCL conference this year and 2 years ago, both with similar results. This past June, with 70 in the room, almost no one had a letter to the editor published the year before they joined CCL, and 60 out of 70 had a letter published in the last year. But when I asked who always sends a copy of their letter to their members of Congress, House and Senate, 4 out of 70 stood up. And when I asked who always calls the aide to make sure they saw the letter and discuss its contents, only 1 out of 70 stood up. So for this part of the call, I have 3 ideas I want to share. If they make sense, if they excite you, then see if you can take them on. If they don't light you up, don't worry about them. So the first message is, whenever you get media published, like letters, op-eds, send them to your reps and senators, or make sure your liaison are sending them. Post them on social media. And finally, call your congressional aides to make sure they saw them and discuss the contents, or make sure your liaisons are doing that. But only take these on if they light you up. Message number 2, if you live in a large population state or there are 5 or more CCL groups in your state, begin having regular conference calls with the groups and your top Senate aides. It might be only 1 from each group, but on these calls, we want to get to the point that they start having the senator join the call and meet with you face-to-face. Point 3, your Republican members of Congress aren't coming on board because they don't want to take a policy position that has them out on the thin branches. Enrolling local conservative thought leaders will thicken up those thin branches. So message 3 is that meetings with and enrolling conservative thought leaders in your city and state on a carbon fee and dividend can make a big difference. So conservative editorial boards, local Republican committees, Republican council members and maybe mayors, state legislatures, and chambers of Congress. So let's get to the thinking behind these ideas. 10 days ago, we circulated the questionnaire I asked at the conference, and 213 people completed the SurveyMonkey questionnaire. 62% of the respondents have been in CCL 2 years or less. I'm going to discuss some of the results with you, and I'll ask pairs of cities to unmute their lines and see if someone in those 2 cities, and I really can take only 1 per pair, can answer different questions. I'll name the 2 cities in a moment, but the first question is this. Who can describe inventor and futurist Buckminster Fuller's use of the word trim tab when it comes to working with government? So let's go to Orange County, California, and Lancaster, Pennsylvania, ask you to unmute your line, star 6, and let me know if there's someone who can describe Buckminster Fuller's use of the word trim tab when it comes to working with government. Try and keep it to 1 minute. Is there someone in Orange County or Lancaster who can give your name and city and answer that one? So star 6 your line, and we'll take a volunteer. The next questions are easier. So is there anyone who can give us a little feedback on Bucky Fuller? Okay, Mark, I hope the star 6ing is working. With everyone.
Sometimes it takes a second, Sam.
No problem.
There's somebody.
Who do we got? Who is it?
This is Mark in Orange County.
Yeah, Mark in Orange County. Why don't you speak up and let us know what Bucky Fuller said about trim tab?
Well, No, I still have to tell you, we don't know. We're all in technology.
Okay, great. Okay, no problem. So here's the deal. Let me just run this one by you, and we'll ask some other questions in a moment. So Bucky Fuller would have said, if you want to change, turn a huge ocean liner, don't try and push it around from the front. Don't even try and turn the massive rudder. At the back of the big rudder is a tiny rudder, a trim tab, which turns more easily. Turn that trim tab, and then the rudder will turn, and then the whole ship. And he would say, with regard to the ship of state or government, don't ever try and push the ship around. Don't even try and turn the rudder. Find the little trim tab at the back of the rudder, turn that, and then the rudder will turn and the entire ship. And so with regard to the ship of state, what would trim tabs be? Would trim tabs be a member of Congress? Would trim tabs be an editorial or a letter to the editor? That's kind of the question on the table. Let's move on. Remember, in the workshop in June, almost no one had a letter to the editor published the year before they joined CCL, and then 60 out of 70 had one published in the last year, but only 4 out of 60 always sent their letter to their representatives and senators, and only one always discussed called the aide to follow up and discuss the letter with them. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on those results, given Bucky Fuller's description of trim tab. Shouldn't one trim tab know what the other trim tab is doing? Why do you think it is or isn't important to always send your letter to your member of Congress and follow up with the aide, or make sure the liaisons are doing that in your group? So let me ask Minneapolis and Madison, Wisconsin, to unmute your line, star 6, and give your name and city and your reaction to the result and why you see it is or isn't important to send your media to Congress and follow up on the phone with the aides or make sure the liaison in your group is doing that. Minneapolis and Madison, unmute and give me your name and city if you'd like to offer your thoughts on this. Please,
and
1 minute if you can. Go ahead.
Orange County and Lancaster, Pennsylvania, go ahead and remute your lines if
okay,
you
that'd be
right.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay.
Anyone in Minneapolis or Madison?
Minneapolis is here. Can you hear me?
Yes, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Sam. This is Paul Thompson. We have a room of about 13 people here.
Great.
And I'd say that we have relationships with probably every one of the eight districts, seven of the eight districts in Minnesota, because we have liaisons that work directly with the individuals that run the office. We have a couple of them in our room. Mike and Kathy work with Representative Keith Ellison's office, and Jamie Long not only is our representative, he's also our friend, and we meet with him in the neighborhood. He's working on a number of projects with us. And it's all about the relationship that gets us face-to-face meetings with Keith Ellison.
Great. And, Paul, let me ask this question. Would you say that the liaisons sometimes or always send copies of the letters or op-eds to the congressman and follow up on the phone with the aide to make sure they saw it?
I'm going to let Mike answer that. He's sitting
okay,
right
go,
next.
Mike.
I would answer that, I guess, honestly by saying, no, I think your suggestion is a great one. What we have done in the past is to bring all of our letters that we've accumulated throughout the year to the CCL conference in D.C. and then present those to Representative Ellison and his office staff.
Brilliant. Mike, that's brilliant. And so my suggestion, and only if it lights you up, is as they're published, as they're in the paper, right then and there, one at a time or whatever it is, sending them ahead. Thanks so much to you guys. I'm going to go on. My next piece is CCL volunteers had 2,706 letters, op-eds, and editorials published last year. That's more than 7 a day. Wow. If those 2,706 media pieces were sent to and followed up on with only one rep and two senators, that would be 8,118 touches. with Congress on this media alone. Wow. Let's get to the meetings with members of Congress and Parliament. Amy Bennett told me that last year we had 1,025 meetings with U.S. congressional offices and 70 more meetings in Canada, and that 619 of the meetings with U.S. congressional offices were at lobby days in D.C. So that means that 406 were district meetings back home. In the survey, 119 people responded to this question. In the last year, how many meetings did you have with each U.S. representative that your group works with other than at the D.C. conference? And 58% said they had zero or one meeting with their representatives back home last year. Now, more than 1,000 meetings last year is mind-blowing. There's no volunteer organization I know that has more than 1,000 face-to-face meetings with Congress or staff last year. None. Amazing. Congratulations. But I'd like to hear a few comments on the fact that our survey found that 58% of respondents had zero or one meeting with their representative or staff back home. So let me ask Salt Lake City and Golden, Colorado to unmute your lines and have someone comment either on that result, 58 of respondents having zero or one meeting with reps or staff back home last year, or on your experience. Perhaps you meet with your rep two or three times a year back home, or how you might not see those meetings back home as important. Salt Lake and Golden, Colorado, star six, please unmute your lines and give your name and city if you'd like to comment on this, and try and limit your comment to a minute if you can.
Phil Nelson, Golden, Colorado.
Great. Welcome, Phil. Go ahead.
Yes. We have met in Washington with the energy person for Ed Perlmutter of our congressional district here in Colorado, but we've found that a very effective thing to do is to just show up at his town meetings here in Lakewood and Golden.
Yeah.
And just
would you have a guess that in the last year you've shown up to one or two or three town meetings?
I think it's a total of three. Karen went to one. Jarrett and I went to one.
Brilliant.
And I went to another. Ed Perlmutter calls them government in the grocery, and he shows up at one of the local grocery stores or other venues, and he kind of holds court. You just show up and give your name to a staffer and wait your turn in line, and then you get a chance to talk directly.
And you get two or 3 minutes or 5 minutes or?
Well, I had a good 10 minutes the last
time. Oh, great. Oh, fabulous. Okay, great. Okay, congratulations. So thanks so much. Let me go on. Mark, I have two more sections. I think I'll do one and skip the other.
Okay.
CCO is doing mind-blowingly great things with Congress and the media. My time on the call was advertised like this. How can we get the maximum impact from the media we generate and other actions we take? So you're doing phenomenal work, really phenomenal. The question is, how can we get maximum impact from the work we're doing? So remember, if these ideas make sense, if they light you up, then see if you can take them on. If they don't worry about them. So I'm going to underscore one of the last 2 points. At the workshop, I asked folks to stand up if they had face-to-face meetings with their U.S. senator. About 20 out of 70 stood up. I learned that California has about 40 CCL chapters and that the 40 CCL chapters communicate with their two U.S. senators by phone through a Northern California liaison and a Southern California liaison. The California senators represent about 39 million constituents, about 3 million more than the population of Canada. My suggestion for California and for any large population state and for any state with 5 CCL groups or more is to begin having a regular conference call with the groups and the top Senate climate aide. It might just be one person per group, or some groups maybe with a lot of retirees might have multiple people on the call from their group. But a regular conference call with the senator's top Climate Aid and at least one person from each group. We would prepare for this call just as we prepare for any congressional visit. The goal is to have the aide see how large you are, how committed you are, how well-informed you are, how out there educating the community you are, and how important a carbon fee and dividend is, and would lead to them eventually bringing the senator onto the call and arranging for face-to-face meetings with the senator. We don't have a lot of time. This will be the last question, but let's ask San Diego North and Lincroft, New Jersey, to unmute your line, star six, and address one or more of these questions. Have you or others in your state met face-to-face with your senators? If so, how'd you do it? If not, could you see it work to have a conference call with the top Senate climate aide and at least one person from each group? Thoughts? San Diego North and Lincroft, New Jersey, unmute your lines and give your name and city if you'd like to comment. Try and keep it to 1 minute.
Hi, it's Lynn in Lincroft.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, when we were in D.C., we did meet with Senator Booker, who came in towards the end of our meeting with four of his aides, and that relationship has been really cultivated by our liaison, Phil Blackwood.
Great. And about how many minutes did you spend with the senator? 1 minute or three or five or more?
Say about seven.
Oh, great. Okay. Great.
Yes, and great. We are going to be meeting in the district later this month.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Congratulations. Mark, I'll skip the last section and then just end with this last little quote.
Great.
Okay. So in Marshall Saunders' welcome talk at the conference, he said, I used to think that the important people were taking care of the important problems. I don't think that anymore. It's up to us little people to preserve this climate, to preserve this civilization and this world. End of quote. Thank you for all you do to preserve this climate, this civilization, and this world. I love you guys.
Wow. Love you too, Sam. Thank you so much, and thank you for having been our constant mentor for the last 7 years. That was phenomenal. Okay. Can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much.
Great.
Whew. Okay. Couple more things, everybody. One is I want to report on a few things since last month's call. We asked people to go out and start finding endorsements in the community. We now have 129 endorsements. 115 of those are for taking climate action. 14 are specifically for carbon fee and dividend. So good work, everybody. And we are asking everybody to focus on your community. If you do run into an organization that's national or someone known nationally or worldwide, we've asked you to please send an email in advance to endorsers@citizensclimatelobby.org to see if there are people who are already working on that group or individual. And again, when you do get the endorsements, send them into that same email address, endorsers@citizensclimatelobby.org. Also, since we had the op-ed coming from the conference, Everything You Know About Republicans and Global Warming is Wrong, we've now had 39 papers pick that up, and that includes places like the Des Moines Register and the Salt Lake Deseret News, which is essentially the paper of the Mormon Church, but also in other countries. So the Sudbury Star picked it up, and it was even printed in Sweden. So they translated it to, and this is the title, Climate Sloshing Son Omvander Republicaner. So how great is that? And for all of you who went out and pitched that, I think it's still a good piece that we can get out to people. And congratulations to everybody who pitched that to papers, whether it was North America or even in Sweden. Phenomenal. I want to give you two quick highlights on what's happening with Pathway to Paris. One is the United Nations Millennium Campaign has chosen Pathway to Paris as an official citizen engagement strategy on climate for 2015. This is a vote for CCL's model of open citizen participation. Due to this collaboration, the United Nations Millennium Campaign will deliver our toolkit for local working sessions to every UN country team around the world. Also, United Nations Environmental Assembly is the only other intergovernmental assembly with universal membership aside from the General Assembly.
We've been asked to advise the UNEA leadership on how to best build serious, sustainable citizen participation into this Global Environmental Policy Assembly next May in Nairobi. Also pretty cool. You know, I know that you know about the work that's happening with your member of Congress and your member of the House and the Senate, your member of Parliament for our Canadians, and I know how far you feel like you have gotten along with them or not. I want to read a note back from a Republican from a very conservative state back to our volunteers so that you have the idea to the degree to which some of our groups are having success of people come to grasp with what we're doing. This woman says, dear so-and-so, thank you for contacting me about your concerns about climate change and the support for revenue-neutral carbon fee and dividend legislation. I share your belief that we must carefully steward and protect our natural resources and environment. I value your input and welcome all comments so I can stay informed on the issues of blank-blank congressional district. As you know, the carbon fee and dividend proposal would slowly increase the fee on carbon emissions each year. The revenue collected from the fee will be held in a carbon fees trust fund and returned back to households as a monthly dividend. Additionally, this proposal includes border adjustments on all imports from other countries who have not adopted similar policies on pricing carbon. It sounds like she's been studying our laser talks, right? Over the past several years, my staff and I have met with many members of Citizens Climate Lobby Organization to learn more about the market-driven policies they support to decrease overall carbon emissions. I have appreciated the honest and open conversations on the carbon fee and dividend approach. While we agree on the goal of clean air, we share some different perspectives on strategy. Particularly, I have concerns on how such a tax will impact the economy as well as how this policy will affect her state's business and comply with international trade obligations, which could lead to potential retaliation. So she's laying out what we need to handle for her to come 100% on board. Please know that I look forward to continued dialogue with constituents, business, and leaders in the community on the revenue-neutral fee and dividend proposal. I am grateful for input from people like you on important issues such as this one. You may rest assured, and I will keep your thoughts in mind when considering legislation, and know that I always consider the long-term consequences of all policy decisions as I want to leave the world a better place for my daughter and all of our children. As always, I greatly appreciate hearing your concerns and perspectives. Please do not hesitate to contact me in the future on other important issues to you and your community. It is a privilege to be your voice in Congress. So I think it's nice to hear not just what's happening with your own member, but that people are working, doing this, you know, meeting time after time, submitting things, and so people can not only wrap their head around what we're doing, but also tell us what they're specifically looking for so that when the time came, they could vote the right way. Okay, I'm going to go over the Canadian and U.S. actions in just a moment, but I want to mention a couple of other things first. If you were on this call at this time last year, we were in the process of trying to win the MIT CoLab Award of just a really phenomenal piece of work by Peter Joseph and Gary Horowitz, and we won the popular vote last year. They asked us to resubmit, and Peter and Gary put an enormous amount of work into this, resubmitted it, just fantastic, really beautiful, elegant description of what we're doing. And we would like to win the people's, you know, the popular vote award again. So that will begin on August 3rd, and you will be able to either go to CCL Community to find a link to that so that you could go vote, and then we will also prompt you with the next weekly bulletin. So if you, when you see that, if you would please forward it to as many people as possible. Again, Peter and Gary did such a beautiful job of describing what we're trying to do, how we're going about doing it, and please make sure you vote and recommend other people vote. Okay, and then one other organizing thing. Our Texas chapters are working really hard to get every congressional district in the state of Texas organized. And our Texas state coordinator, Peter Brin, is actually going to go on the road for a month to start chapters and generate interest. So if you know people in Texas, if you know people and you could introduce them to Peter, that would be fantastic. His email address is peter.bryn, B-R-Y-N, at gmail.com, peter.bryn, B-R-Y-N. And again, us being organized in every district in Texas is really important. And if you know people there and you can introduce them to us as part of this process, it would be fantastic. Okay, so what are we doing? Well, first of all, in Canada, Kathy really wants us to use Sam's input to maximize the impact of our letters, also to work on the endorsement project just like in the U.S., and then also we created we didn't, Kathy, and the people in Canada did, some really beautiful PSAs up in Canada and to get them in many radios and as many spots as we can. In the U.S., we want you to keep working on the endorsement project. You know, as the letter I just wrote you, this member is saying, I want to see businesses, local leaders showing support for this. We do want you to focus on your community, and if you do come along with something where it's national or a well-known person nationally, send a note to endorsers at citizensclimatelobby.org so we can make sure we're coordinating, we're not all approaching the same person. And then, you know, August recess is one of the best times that we can actually meet with members of Congress. I know I was in meetings in D.C., and I know some of you were, where it was scheduled to be the member. I'm sure they planned on doing it, and a hearing got called. Well, that isn't going to happen for this next month because they're going to be in district. Or like the people in Golden, there are tools on the action sheet this month to what happens if you go to public events. So let's use this month we get as many chances as possible to get to our members. And let me just echo something Sam said. You know, it's really, really important that you do the things here that light you up, not the things that you think you have to do. The last thing we would want to do is have CCL turn into a second job for everybody where, oh, okay, now I got to go write this letter. I got to go meet my member. We're just not going to produce the kind of results that we need if we're doing things in that manner. So let's please attend to doing the things that actually light you up, turn you on, fire you up, get you excited to do great things. All right, I am going to unmute everybody, and I just think every single group wants to give a big shout-out to thank Sam for being our guest and for being our mentor for all these years. So give me just 1 second to unmute everybody.